Instead, why not take up some of the equally wonderful visions of Judge Edmonds? Why not read them and believe in them with the same unprejudiced eye and heart? If you look believingly back to Daniel or to Ezekiel to find prophecies, and if you next search the New Testament to find their fulfillments, why not also go faithfully back 8 or 10 years ago and find whether it be not true that Judge Edmonds had a vision in which the present American rebellion was predicted and depicted with wonderful clearness and exactness. He gave it out with the conviction that it was simply a picturesque representation of the great battle between error and truth. But when it is read in connection with the current political history and experiences of today, it will appear as literal a prophecy of what has occurred, and is occurring in this country, as anything prophetical within the lids of testaments, the American Rebellion foretold in a vision by Judge Edmonds. In the New York Harmonial Advocate, published 10 years ago, Volume I, we find the following: a vast plain is spread out before me, and far in the distance a crowd of human beings. Above them is a vast banner, outspread all over them. Its groundwork is black, and its letters still blacker, the extract of blackness itself. The words inscribed upon it are: superstition, slavery, crime, forming, as it were, a half circle. Many of those beings have smaller banners of the same material and device, which they hug closely to their bosoms, as if part of their very life. All have dark shades over their eyes. It is a sad picture, dark and melancholy. A broad battlefield is being spread. And dark beings, with their black banners, are coming out, arrayed for battle with brighter ones. The contest will be fearful. Those dark ones are confident in their numbers, for they are as 1,000 to 1. But see! There comes from that bright mountain a herald of light, and he cries aloud through all the nations, which shall conquer: truth, liberty, and progression, or superstition, slavery, and crime. His words are heralded in the air. How beautiful are his looks! He is a spirit of light. His thrilling tones infuse new light into the brighter ones, and they rise with renewed energy, determined at last to conquer. It is a mighty contest, and is to determine the fate of nations. All the base passions that have degraded humanity are awakening in their might, and rush on in their fury, battling for their very existence. A more brilliant beam of light shines from the faces of the progressed ones, showing the light and the life that are within them, and that are cheering them to the contest. Now, lo! The view opens beyond the dark mountains, and behold there a glorious scene, where love, truth, and wisdom are enthroned. I see the beautiful landscapes, dewy lawns, winding rivers, and rich pastures, and an atmosphere so sweet and balmy, that the spirit might dissolve itself in its loveliness. A race of spiritual beings inhabit there. An unearthly radiance flows from the brain of each, and is wafted up by unseen zephyrs to make the glorious light which shines from behind the dark mountains. It is the home of liberty, truth, and progression, and has sent forth its spirits, holding up that glorious banner. It is upheld by their unseen hands, and it is their brilliancy which cuts the radiance on the inhabitants below. From that beautiful place they send forth spirits that whisper, in voiceless tones, encouragement and hope to those who battle in that strife. You will find nothing in the pages of Scripture, I repeat, more exactly descriptive of events which have occurred years after the vision was given to the world. But this is only one of 500 prophecies, many of which are in my possession, sent for publication from Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois, and from different parts of New England. I know a gentleman who had rejected spiritualism in do, over 5 years ago, in consequence of these extravagant prophecies that there would be a great war in this country, that blood would flow, that the people would have diseases, and that the government was to be broken, etc., etc. Prophetic communications of this strange character came to him very frequently. But the gentleman could not believe that we were to have a war in this peaceful country. He denounced the communications as unprofitable, and he would not further receive them. I met that gentleman not long since in this city, and he said, I have repented. Those extravagant spiritual communications have all been literally fulfilled. There was no exaggeration in them. Next headline, A Mother in the Summerland. The gifted poetess, Mrs. Hemans, communicated, December 25, 1852, a picturesque account of scenes in the social life of the angels. The following is a brief extract concerning a mother and her child, how lovely she seems. As she glides along, she holds in her arms an innocent babe. What holy affection and chastened love is expressed in her countenance. She pauses and speaks, and caresses her babe, and says, O Spirit, I have left my home on earth, and I have met my beloved babe already, and how joyful I am. But will you not send back to earth and tell my dearly loved friends how happy I am, and how useless is all their weeping for me? Oh, tell them I am learning the ways of peace and happiness, that I am preparing to receive and instruct them when they shall arrive here, that, although a mother's form has left the earth, a mother's love still shares all their hopes and joys. And oh, bid them be hopeful and seek to have the love of God shed abroad in their hearts on earth, that I may be able to approach them on their entrance into the spirit world. Happy, happy mother. Bearing her babe in her arms, who had been brought to meet and comfort her on her upward journey. But mark how she pauses to send back a word of encouragement and hope to those who are left behind. On another point she says, the spirit, on entering its next state, only becomes more awake, more sensitive to the realities which lie beyond its view. It but steps on another round of the ladder, which leads upward and onward to spheres of eternal love and unfolding wisdom. And by thy life here, O man, dost thou make thy heaven fair and lovely, or thy existence dark and gloomy, until thou hast overcome thy errors by earnest labor? In conclusion, I wish to call your attention to persons in the spirit world who take great interest in exciting the hopes of humanity, and in holding up the banner of progress and reform. I have already given accounts of these public-spirited societies. I will give one out of hundreds of instances, of a communication to minds on earth, who were at the time somewhat despairing, testimony in favor of freedom. In November, 1852, Judge Edmonds reported the following from the Summerland, This is the day when freedom shall be known among the sons of humanity. This is the day when the chains shall fall from the oppressed spirit. This is the day when the pulse of humanity shall quicken with an inward life. And now shall the arm of man be made strong. Now shall the stream of truth brighten and deepen in its flow. Now shall the light of heaven grow clearer and brighter amid this glorious dawning. Prepare ye for the resurrection of humanity. Stand ye up in the strength and majesty of spiritual manhood. Let the scenes of earth no longer enthrall your senses and deaden the soul. A voice calls you to a higher destiny. It is the voice of freedom breaking from the skies. Listen. Not with your ears only, but with your souls. Listen, and in the deep silence of your inner being may ye find its earnest whisperings to lead you up beyond the veil of darkness, beyond the tumults of this lower sphere, to lead you up, up, far up in the pathway of unfolded angels, and give you strength to mount on high, as the eagle soars, to breathe the air of freedom forever and ever. Next headline, Material Work for Spiritual Workers. This world is not a fleeting show, for man's illusion given, he that hath soothed a widow's woe, or wiped an orphan's tear, doth know, there's something here of heaven. In relation to this subject it is deemed necessary to met forth three propositions, first, that the material and spiritual universes are regulated by immutable laws. Law is the external manifestation of principle, a principle is the external manifestation of an idea is the thoughtful, loveful life of deity. Second, that man is endowed with a self-conscious power called reason, reason is the harmony of all his faculties, including the elements of affection and intuition, by the exercise of this power he discovers the laws by which those universes are kept in unvarying order and irreversible harmony. Third, that he is endowed with abilities and attributes to apply his discoveries to all the common conditions from which he proceeds, and of which binaturally is the governor and supreme head. The infinite fountain is composed of ideas. Nothing could be more abstruse, more metaphysical and abstract, than the truth which is hidden within this statement. Most persons use the word idea according to the dictionary sense. An idea, in popular definition, is the form or conception or image in the mind of anything which you read about, on which you are thinking, or of something which is being related to you. To catch an idea is to get a definition of whatever may be presented for your reflection. That is not the sense in which the term is used in this discourse. The common definition is applicable to thought. A thought in the mind is derived from a description, or by means of an object, a sound, a flavor, an odor, in short, whatever may address you, through your senses, will evolve a thought among your faculties, and if that thought is coincident with and exactly representative of that which excited it, the result is a truth, or else a fact. From an accumulation of such facts and truths all positive sciences are developed and established. But such truths and such facts are not ideas. If you have an idea, you have the essential life out of which all things and thoughts spring. Clairvoyance is the ability to discern things afar off by coming in contact with the life of things, realizing their inherent essences, becoming instantly acquainted with the intelligent principles by which things roll out from unfathomable depths into the phenomenal universe. An idea within vegetation causes all this variety, not only of the form and growth, but also of the distribution of the color and of the arrangement of the atoms which are inseparable from and coincident with those colors, and of the odors also which come with the colors and out of such an atomic arrangement. There is in the fields no chaos, nothing is left to chance, all is system, harmony. Man's function is to learn the principles and ideas contained in the source, to ascertain the scientific laws by which atoms, visible and indivisible, come into their present arrangements, and thence obtain the secret of the harmonies which pervade all the ways and works of wisdom. Having made discoveries, his next business is to reduce them to what is called science. Science regulates the perceptive and intellectual parts of his mind, gives system, proportion, and regularity of action, by means of which system of thought and precision of procession be makes all his progress and expands his civilization. But the restless, progressive mind soon exhausts his discovery. He must go higher in the same direction, make further discoveries, and thence more beautiful expansions in art, and more complete applications in common things. Having applied his new facts to things, he exhausts them, or loses interest in them, and thus it becomes necessary that he should sow a new crop of discoveries. So he charges the soil with new fertilizing thoughts, and puts the old land to other uses. His restless, progressive mind needs it, for he is endowed with a wondrous variety of powers and functions and attributes, which must be gratified. The consequence of such awakening is that his mind is more than ever anxious for advancement. Humboldt could not rest in his study after having investigated the physical facts of a quarter of the globe. His discoveries were accurate, so far as they went, but they were only doors to greater and grander things. Humboldt's mind is not at rest today, he is still traveling and discovering sections in the house not made with hands. His immortal feet press other hills and mountains, his new lit eyes see other landscapes, and his large mind is measuring new scenes of imperishable beauty and significance. Astronomers, too, do not soon rest. Having discovered one planet, they must discover another. The discovery of 100 planets makes it necessary, for the feeding of such hungry minds, that 200 shall be discovered. The time comes for the application. Then millions invest in one discovery. All men buy and read almanacs, because the discoveries of a few earnest, truthful, scientific men have fixed the facts that regulate the seasons. Suns and moons and stars rise and set so mathematically and unmistakably accurate, that millions of people, without a thought of skepticism, purchase almanacs, regulate their business indoors and out, and conduct nearly all their agricultural and commercial affairs, by means of the application of the discoveries of a few able, earnest friends of science. Men must go forward in their work of progressive civilization. They have the grand example of the expanded universe ever before them. The physical and spiritual universes never fail in any of their functions, because they are regulated by laws that never fail to carry out the designs with which they were freighted from the heart. Principles are the life of laws, ideas are the life of principles, and God is the life of ideas. No man or woman is spiritually minded until he or she has arrived at spirit. To be a spiritualist is to nominate yourself by a mere term. To be spiritual is to possess a great soul-stirring and progressing idea. A spiritual worker is one who works from the essential center, from ideas, through the leverage of laws, principles as the fulcrum over which the lever acts on any solid substance with which it comes in contact. Standing with the long end of the lever, a knowledge of natural law, in their hands, such workers can move the mountains which stand between them and the attractions and benefits of the future. Faith and works are inseparable. No soul is wholly destitute of faith in God. Truth and love and wisdom and immutable principles, these millions believe in even when they have no conception of a superpersonal consciousness, God, or of an interpersonal love essence called nature. No man is destitute of faith in principles. Virtue and goodness and philanthropy, and whatever is high and noble, command the reverent love and respect of all mankind. Those who possess ideas are truly spiritual and progressive people. When they work as flowers grow, from centers through their own organizations. Organizations come up here and there around them, they spring up and bring forth like harvests in the fields. Thousands, yea millions, are this hour waiting for such center-born organizations. The world's busy millions do not get at ideas, they need temporary organizations and supporting substances. When a building is in process of construction, a scaffolding is a necessary part of the work. The carpenter calculates for a scaffold just as carefully as for the various materials out of which the building is to be made. When the structure is perfected, the scaffolding is removed. Even so, when progressionists elaborate an idea and get it into the world, let them take down their no longer needed scaffolding, the organization by which the idea was attained. Let the temple of truth stand white and immortally beautiful before the eyes of all men. Let it be based upon the solid rock of scientific knowledge, let it be seen and felt by all, let it be inhabited by everyone who feels the essential attraction. Must a man wear the clothes of his youth forever because they fitted him once? Or, must men always cling to their creeds and doctrines because by means of them they attained newer ideas in religion and a few finer habits in civilization? Let creeds, doctrines, definitions cease, as, indeed, they finally do with men and women of ideas. Distinctions vanish like the mists of morning in the presence of ideas that burn with such unutterable, glorious effulgence. But before you get to ideas, such scaffolding as forms definitions, doctrines, thoughts, creeds, theories, systems, are necessary. I never stop to battle with the size of the clothes that children must wear. Little patterns are natural to little folks. But I will remonstrate, and pronounce an injunction in the holy authority of ideas, when I see grown-up persons still trying to keep in the garments of their childhood. Behold sectarians! See the little garments with which they sway themselves, in which they abound and cribbed and cabined and confined, and dare not move, miserable, fashionable mummies, grown-up apparently as big feeling as anybody with brains, great, handsome-looking ladies, and great, beautiful men, going into the churches and taking on the old garments and sitting in sackcloth without ashes, all of it a part of the machinery of childhood in old-time religion. It is plainly a demonstration that they have not ideas. They are not free. The children of light are free, because light is truth. Truth gives freedom, not only to your judgments, but also to your affections, just as true and as free in your externals as in your inmost. Freedom and purity are commensurate and inseparable. Pure freedom comes from pure spirit. License and unrestrained indulgence are the impulsive freebootery of the impassioned soul toward that to which it is directed. You can see lustfulness and licentiousness in their disguises all through the world, in politics, in society, and in the social relations. Democratic notions of freedom are but the uncouth prophecies of what one day will be the common experience of the people, accepted as divine, without any thought of impurity, and incorporated in the unwritten statutes of the universal heart. But there are persons who, destitute of ideas, we merely the forms which restrain and circumscribe them. Such externalists think that the world is wrong, and must be brought to their standard of right. That is bigotry. Must I hate my brother because he enters the Calvinistic Church, and shun my sister in the Church of Rome, because she does not think as I do? Ideas lift us out of thoughts, above forms, above creeds, above doctrines and systems, and breathe the spirit of unbounded charity and goodwill. Man's power is to discover, not to create. Man can create nothing, he can only discover and apply. Now man is destined to discover the laws by which an infinite has expressed imperishable harmony throughout the material and spiritual universes, the discovery of the laws by which all eternal harmony is established. Succeeding this discovery will come the power to apply. This application will bring in new social, political, and religious relations, like that higher harmony which he beholds and worships in the physical universe. Thus man is endowed with a very vast mission of eternal uses to him. If men were destitute of ideas, they would be animals. If men were animals, they would be regulated by the harmonious laws of life and instinct which regulate animals. But mankind have ideas, therefore we are what animals can never be capable of, winging our way through the empyrean of light, through the universe of boundless freedom. I do not mean that we are free in any absolute physical sense. No man can fly outside of matter. No man can reverse or violate a principle, no man can mortally offend an idea, no man can disturb God. But man can by discovery bring himself into relation with ideas and principles and laws, and become physically healthy like the material universe, and spiritually healthy like the spiritual universe. Then, like them and with them, he is in harmony. Then he can bestow happiness, goodness, and divine strength on those about him. This seems to me to be as simple as any sum in the rudiments of arithmetic. No creations are made in music. Sounds exist through all the temple of nature. Men can merely discover the laws of the omnipotent by which sounds may be made to harmonize in different combinations. Music is the name given to the science thus discovered, and to the application of the science. But there is a central keynote by which all notes and chords are arranged and attuned. Man's position with relation to all the kingdoms beneath is the master chord, and the central keynote. If he is not attuned, his discords shiver through all the subordinate kingdoms. If he is in harmony, all the kingdoms of the earth feel, enjoy, participate, reciprocate, and justice reigns. Reciprocation is an expression of justice. Distributive justice is seen in the equal expansion of natural reciprocation. From your own system outwardly into society send forth a good and just condition, and you thence and thereby expand into a state by which you can be fed and built up stronger and better. It is necessary that many should be together in one place in order that all may be fed and nourished and made to grow by spiritual things. All persons testify against and naturally shrink from isolation, desolation, loneliness. They testify against those conditions because nature, the spirit mother of all intelligences, has determined that society shall be the form, the menstruum, the universal ocean in which all are molded, fashioned, and dissolved. There is a social sovereignty which is just as obligatory as individual sovereignty. Some accept the doctrine that individual sovereignty covers and comprehends all that a man is allowed by nature to practice and carry out his individual preferences and decisions at his own cost. But this doctrine is but half the story of man's relation to society. It is logical and true, but true only just so far as the half of anything is true. Social sovereignty is larger and grander, more perfect, more binding, and more divine, just as the ocean is larger, grander, more perfect and more divine, than the spring on the mountain's side or the rivulet that starts from the quiet valley. The life of the individual is the stream that flows down through the valley. The ocean is made of all springs and all streams, and all the rivulets that flow down from the millions of hills hasten to seek their common social level. The ocean is the grand symbol of the infinite spirit in which all minds dwell, and out of which all things spring into manifestation and animation. Geologists tell you that all things came from the sea. First, the water was universal, then came the dry land. The first is society. Society is universal, then came institutions, organizations, dry land, solid places. But the individual life is inseparable from the universal society of mankind. The spiritual worker is one who sees the idea, who catches the spirit within a principle, who works for the harmonious molding of whatever is about him, and not selfishly for personal advancement. For example, look at the question of intemperance. The Mainlicker law, a matter of so much controversy some years ago, was passed to legislate alcohol out of existence. But the moment you ascend to the presence of an idea, you discover that men are not constituted to be driven into or out of existence. Their appetites and passions cannot be easily destroyed by legislation. It is true that good laws may hamper and destroy, to a great extent, the vices of society. But how do most of our best laws originate? They originate with legislators and governors who have ideas. A few good men first proclaim the principle, then the office-seeking politicians grasp it and say, there is success in that greed, and they take hold of it, and carry into politics what was, at first a glorious effort with a few philanthropic minds. In 10 years the good thought, the good idea that was first promulgated, is degraded or obliterated. Then come organizations, scheming, wire-pulling, lock-rolling, all these desperate and diabolical plans which selfish men without principle have instituted, in order to carry out what they supposed would be successful. Then what is to be done? Why, the moral police, composed of men and women, must continue the work. They must go interior, close to the life of the law, to the idea. They must stand upon platforms in public and in private places, and utter those divine thoughts which go deeper than the plans and policies of the world. They are commissioned to act just where and in proportion as they comprehend the idea of justice. The spiritually minded person is inspired. Justice is not a word, it is the name of a sacred principle. It does not mean that you must do what I think is right. It means that you must be just. First of all to and within yourself. Your justice to me will be like your habitual justice to yourself. Suppose you meet a man who has indulged largely in intoxication. It is useless to appeal to him with, what will people say? He don't care what they say, he is, perhaps, lost to that kind of respect, he does not seek it, he has been too many times deceived and debauched. The sailor lies down in the hold of his ship, drunken as a beast. And the deserted, abandoned woman cannot be successfully appealed to from the social side of life. There is only one thoroughly practical way to reach those who have got so low in the bed of sorrow. It is by affectionately inspiring the hearts of such persons with the idea that they are immortal, and not only so, but that they have in them the resources of sweet happiness, and that those resources can be opened, and that you will faithfully aid them in such opening and to their consequent happiness. First assure a person that no reliance can be placed upon such help from you, or from God's angels, or from spirits in the flesh or out, until there is basis in the soul's will and aspirations. You reach the heart the moment you ascend to this point of wisdom. It is bringing justice to the person. The sad soul feels it. Bathe your body, my friend, you have a beautiful body. You have feet and can walk, you have hands and can use your arms, you have eyes and can see, you have ears and can bear, and a tongue with which to speak the words of truth. Do you disregard these parts?